Welcome to the Power of Real Estate Show. Again, we're launching a show on every Tuesday where I'm going to be interviewing an expert. Some weeks I'll be flying solo, bringing you real estate content that makes sense. It's easy to use because I believe that every single person can get into real estate if they understand the strategies. The number one thing people say to me, I can't get into real estate because I don't have capital. Well, not only do we do tons of training on our channel around raising capital, but there's a lot of strategies you can get into real estate without having any capital. And saying that I don't get into real estate for capital, if I could just love you tonight as an excuse, I want you to throw that one out because it's not one that you should even allow to cross your lips, because there's a lot of ways to get into real estate without money.
One man, one mission, to help people create freedom through real estate. Welcome to the Power Up Real Estate Podcast that brings you pure gold when it comes to investing in real estate, growing your net worth, and create the life you want. It's time to find deals and find money. Please welcome your host, Mike Fritz.
Welcome in, everybody. Welcome in. I have with me a good friend of mine and a new partner of mine that we'll talk about in just a minute. How's the weather up in New York, Shannon? How are you guys doing up there?
It is freezing. It's freezing. I was just feeling awful. I wish I was back in Florida, but yeah, we're here.
I'll tell you every time I go to New York, I got to go to New York in a couple weeks to speak up by Auburn. And I'm in Phoenix. And so I'm kind of dreading it.
Yeah, it is. I'm not gonna lie. This has been a terrible winter so far.
Oh my goodness, man. Some of our friends that live up there are just absolutely buried in snow. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I feel so bad for y'all. And if you don't know me, my name is Mike Fritz. I'm the founder of Power Up Real Estate. Our mission is to help people create financial freedom through multifamily real estate investing and help them truly understand the world of real estate. And that's what brings me to my friend Shannon St. Val tonight, who she's up in New York. She's coming and hanging out with us tonight and talking a little bit about Airbnb. I met Shannon through a mutual friend, one of my coaching members, and I was talking to him one day, and he said, you know, I've got this person up in New York. I know this girl, she's a rock star Airbnb person. I'm like, yeah, connect her to me. So I connect to Shannon, and she now manages an 8-unit property for us, an 8-unit multifamily building right next to Notre Dame, and she's managing that. Her team is unbelievable, and they're managing that for us. But what I've learned more about Airbnb with working with Shannon in 3 weeks than I've learned about Airbnb in 3 years. And so that's why I wanted Shannon to just come on tonight and riff with us a little bit about how to bust into the Airbnb market. It's a hot topic right now. So how do you do it? Shannon, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here and share this knowledge. I mean, I started off not knowing much, and now, yeah, we've just been booming, and I'm happy to answer any questions and be here as a resource. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, tonight, first, let's tell everybody about how in the world did you stumble into the Airbnb space? You've obviously become an amazing management company in Airbnb, but also being an investor yourself. How did you fall into the short-term rental space? And by the way, remind everybody that Airbnb is a company, not a way to do real estate, just so we know. Exactly. A lot of people say, I'm going to Airbnb my property. That's like saying I'm going to grab a Kleenex. You do know Kleenex is a brand. It's actually not what is inside the box. It's what's on the box. So anyway,
talk a little bit more about that, because there's other channels that you can go.
Yeah, through. Yeah. That's what we want to talk about tonight. So, but tell us, how'd you get here? I mean, like you're a high-powered businesswoman and corporate, and how'd you end up here?
So yeah, I started off my degrees in finance and real estate. I ended up going into commercial real estate with GE Capital on the financial analytics side when I first started off right out of school. And then, you know, subprime meltdown happened. They laid off a few folks, and I transitioned into a typical Wall Street job. I was doing consulting with one of the big four consulting firms and leveraging that background. But as I was working there on the side, I used to travel a lot for work, and I was like, okay, let me rent out my place. And so I rented it out on Airbnb while I was gone. And this is about 7 years ago when I was kind of new to the game, and it was kind of new, you know, Airbnb was a little bit new then. So I was one of the first in, especially at least amongst my peers. And we started out renting out one. We're like, wow, we're making so much money. On my 2-bedroom apartment in Harlem, in Manhattan, I was making like $400 a night, and my rent was like, you know, 2000. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. Then I started, and I was like, well, let me just rent out another unit. So then I went and got another apartment. Then I got another apartment and got another apartment. And then I was thinking to myself, like, wow, I'm making from the 2-3 apartments, I'm making more than my 6-figure salary, you know, working with, you know, Wall Street firms and all the big banks and stuff. So it was a no brainer. Then after that, I left and, you know, here we go. We built a whole, you know, full blown business. And here I am now.
That's crazy. I love the stories of that. You know, I didn't really set out to do this, but it just kept getting better and better and better. And it became the only way to do it. And for Shannon's going to make you think about doing real estate any other way, because once you hear, when we start talking a little bit about some of the numbers, you're going to see why so many people are passionate about Airbnb space and why Shannon is. So let's first start with this. What is some of the biggest mistakes you see in the Airbnb space? What are some of those mistakes? Because I know you see, I mean, you saw them when I came to you. I came to her a hot mess and she's like, dude, you can't do this.
Yeah.
And
she
arranged us and got us back on track. But what are some of those big, like, yeah, these are some mistakes I see all the time.
Well, the big one is not spending enough upfront on just staging the property right and photos. Like, people don't realize, like, your photo, like, spending money on a photographer, spending money, if you're not going to do it, get a great iPhone and then send it to a great editor. And that's what I do. I have this great company that I work with. So if I can't get the photographer to come out, I'll take it with my phone and then I'll send it out to a really great editor. Photos will make or break. You need to make your photos look as good as possible. And that alone will bring you, you know, to the top of the pile. And also just like staging. And some people are not good at it, right? So
I'm terrible.
Yeah. And what did we do? We ended up spending just a few dollars, a few hundred dollars, and we completely changed if we even had like a before and after, you could see.
Oh my goodness. Did. Yeah. Our place looked awful. And I think that's a good point. Let's park there for a minute. Cause when I started this, I mean, we know, you know, we put pictures on so people can see what the apartment's like, but I didn't realize how much, I mean, people book off photos nearly alone. And so talk a little bit about that. I mean, if you're looking at two properties, what difference do the photos play in a consumer's mind?
So you can immediately tell when someone's doing it as an investment property and they don't know what they're doing, right? Mm. Because they do the bare minimum and they don't put the small accents like curtains or throw pillows or throw blankets. Like, those are little small things that make the place feel like home, or like plants. Like, that seems small. And if you're like building, if you're just trying to churn them out, you got a 10 unit building, you're just trying to get some stuff in there a lot. And I can literally I can go on Airbnb and look at some units and I can say, oh yeah, this guy, he's just doing the bare minimum to just get it done.
But just get by, right.
Just get by. But people, the reason you got to think about who you're attracting, who your target market. If you're renting an Airbnb, you want it to kind of feel like a home.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't want it to feel like just a hotel room, because I can get that anywhere.
Exactly. So I think that can help a lot in terms of making your rental, and it really doesn't cost that much. And there's a few vendors, and I think I introduced you to Quartz, which is, we get used public furniture. We're able to furnish a full, if you could do one full bedroom apartment is $1,500 for just the big pieces. And then you tack on maybe an extra $500 for like the accents and the little things. You can, like, I've just finished an apartment right now in Brooklyn, a brownstone, 3-bedroom brownstone. And we looked at the total furnishing. I got it down to $6,500 for a full. And honestly, it could have been less if the owner wasn't so picky about what type of desk he wanted. Like, I could have gotten it down probably closer to $5,000 fully furnished. So there's ways to do this.
Yeah, totally. So furnishing, and what I want everybody to see, we're talking about furnishing. I want to back up a couple steps and talk a little bit about where to get started. So where do most people get started in Airbnb? So if they're going to, or with short-term rental properties, if they're going to start leveraging this short-term space, where do people get started?
So this is challenging. And this is because the industry is so new, there's not a lot of great data, right? Mm. So you can go, there's sites like AirDNA. I use Price Labs, but what it does is just pull you. You have to pay for some of these reports, and please pay for them because it's worth every penny. And I think when I was working with you, Mike, I had to show you at least where the averages were. And what you're finding is that you start at least there. So you at least know, if I do average, what would I get? Right. And then, you know, that if you work either with a great property management company, then they'll do better than average, right? And that's kind of how we kind of benchmark it. But you really need good data to come in. And then you can also go, we also go into the different sites. We go to booking.com. I look at hotel data. I look at what's nearby the schools, like if it's, you know, what dates are, you know, very popular to see, okay, which dates are trending, which dates are not. And then that's how I can come up with like a budget or a plan of what I can estimate for a year. And then I'm saying, okay, is this worth us best investing in? Is this worth the investment?
Yeah. Because,
we talked about this, but yeah, is it worth the investment? So you start with at least getting some good market data to then move forward to make the decision about whether you want to invest in that in the Airbnb.
So I want to talk about this in part here for a minute of the average everyday listener listening. How do I get into Airbnb? You know, I live in my house. I don't have another property. Do I buy it? Whatever. Oh. And you and I both know there's you can purchase the property, but there's also what we call rental arbitrage. And rental arbitrage is something that is a word I didn't even know what that word meant until about 5-6 months ago when I was talking, and businesses do this. It's called business arbitrage, where they buy a business under one category, sell it under another category because that category will pay more money for that type of business. And so I didn't understand that this was also applied to the rental space. So first, let's talk a little bit about what rental arbitrage is. And then I want to hear your take on if it's better to own or do this arbitrage. So let's first start, what is rental arbitrage and why is it a powerful strategy?
So with rental arbitrage, essentially let's say you don't have enough money to purchase the asset, especially with me, I was in Manhattan, you know, you're talking about you're spending at least $1 million, $2 million to even get a building, right? However, rents though, I can afford the rent and it's less of a risk if I can go in and then pitch to an owner and say, hey owner, I'll give you more than market rate, right, for the rent. And then you let me rent it out on Airbnb, or you can either do a split with them, or you can just do a flat rate rent amount where you give them a guaranteed rent. Depends on how comfortable you are with your numbers, you know, and you can decide which one works best for you. But it's a great way to get in with no money. And I'm going to tell you, that's how I got started. I bought my condo in cash based on all the money that I was making from the rental arbitrage. And then I went to go, you know, get some investment property. So yeah.
So again, to recap this rental arbitrage, you're renting from an owner, mm-hmm. and then you're short-term rental or Airbnb the property out and you're collecting the difference.
You're leveraging someone else's asset. Yes,
exactly. So what expenses come into the arbitrage model? Like if I'm going to do, cause it will still take some money, but it's much different than actually buying the asset, obviously. So what are the expenses I need to plan for if I want to rent somebody else's apartment out or condo out or house out and then Airbnb it and make money? What expenses do I need to plan for?
The biggest one is furnishing it.
Yep.
Because you run the risk. Furnishing it costs money. You can come in. So you got to put the deposit down, obviously. You put down, depending on, you know, your situation that you have set up, you put down the deposit, first month rent, and then the furnishing. And once that's up, it's very little upfront. And that's why I was like, oh, wow, I should go ahead and do this, because literally the first 10 properties I did was all rental arbitrage.
Yeah. So you've got your furnishing.
Your furnishing, utilities, your typical, like as if you were renting it yourself, you still have to pay for the utilities, cable, or in this case, you know, now everyone has your streaming devices. So the typical things. And then the one big thing that I guess you need to kind of think of is your cleaning fees. And leveraging that and laundry fees, which ends up starting to add up. But again, a lot of the sites have it built in where you can charge the guests for it. The other thing I did budget in is I don't want to bother the landlord for a lot of maintenance things, because there's a lot of small maintenance things that come up that you don't want to necessarily bother your landlord, especially when you're doing, you know, Airbnb. So you budget in a little bit more maintenance expense than you would typically, because you should in theory kind of take some of this on. Like if the toilet's clogged, I'll go fix that. But if it's like hard wire, like electrical, I'll have the owner fix that. There's certain things where you're like, you're already, you know, you kind of budget that then, but that's just me trying to be fair to the owner, because there's a lot more wear and tear going on in their homes. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I want to reiterate what Shannon just said. So you have to think about this. I had to think about this like a marketer. You have to think about it like you're selling these owners on why they should allow you to rent out their place on Airbnb, right? So what is valuable to them? Well, taking good care of their place, getting paid on time, all of those kinds of things. So we're going to talk about that in just a minute. I want to back up to this expense piece before we move on to talk about how you actually get an owner to sign off on this. So so stop on the expensing. So when you, Shannon just said, got to think of yourself like, you know, just like you're renting a place. So utilities, you've got to furnish it, but you also got to remember when you move in, you've got that deposit and your first month's rent. So you have to remember your package price. And this is what we're learning now is, you know, you might, it might cost you $10,000 or $15,000 to get into a property, but think about that for a minute. $10,000 or $15,000. When Shannon shares some numbers for you in a minute of what that $10,000 or $15,000 could mean to you, you're going to know why this is a good potential. And I'm going to actually talk about in a minute how you can do that without even that money, without even having to come up with that money. So let's go back to the owners. So a lot of owners out there, I own a lot of property, a lot of owners out there, they don't, they're nervous to let people Airbnb it because they don't know who's in their place. There's a different person there every month. Walk us through why would owners rent out their place on Airbnb?
So
why is that a good idea for them to do?
Yeah, because especially in places like New York where it's hard to get a tenant out, or any really tough cities where, like, I don't know, LA, I've heard some places, or San Francisco, where it's almost impossible to get a bad tenant out. It takes you a year. And then also why you'd want to, or at least where you're coming, you're presenting to an owner, hey, this is a rental arbitrage situation. You're telling them, you're giving them a guaranteed rent. You're professional. You could pay. I usually pay early. I always pay early, actually, because I don't even want them to think, I want them to feel like I'm the best tenant they've ever had, right?
Ever. Because exactly. What's going to happen when they have another unit come up across town?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And then they're going to want to work with me, which I had one guy. It's so funny. When I first started off, I did one unit in one building. I didn't really tell the owner at first. And this is, again, this is when I was first getting started and I really didn't really. So I was asking for forgiveness, not for permission. So I started off, didn't tell the owner at first. He saw how well I was renting it. He gave me the entire building.
Oh, my goodness.
So he was like, this is great. Just take the entire, after the contract ended with the last person that was in there, he gave me the entire building to manage. Cause he was like, this is great. I get above market rate. And there's some owners I do different structures with where I'll give them 10 or 20% above market. So then I'll present to them. I'm like, look, this is what market rates rents are. Here's, I'll give you 10 or 20% more than that. Right.
So
then they're already incentivized, to want to work with me because they're already getting more than they would get if they rented it out normally. And then I tell them, hey, I'll take care of all the basic stuff. And I try my best not to bother them with anything that's not like structural.
Yeah. That's key. I think that's key because I own a lot of properties. And if I have a tenant that if the toilet clogs, they fix it. Or if a sink's dripping, they fix it. I'm not letting go of that tenant. I'm just letting you know. That's a powerful tenant to have in there. So if I'm a landlord, so you're thinking about this arbitrage. By the way, those of you that are listening in, the reason we're starting here is this gives you the ability to start getting into real estate for very low amount of cash, because a lot of real estate, and again, I'll talk about in a minute how you can partner with people with money partners on this, but this gives you the ability to start Airbnb-ing properties. We'll move on to Airbnb-ing your own property in a minute, but arbitraging gives you the ability to start going after units that are empty now and building a short-term rental portfolio. So owners, they're going to get more rent. You're going to take care of some of the maintenance. What are some other selling points?
That you won't give them any headaches. Like if it's time to get you out, like I tell the owners, whenever you want your house back, you just give me 2 months notice. I'm out. Whenever you want it back. So there's no risk to them. So they feel like, oh, this is not working out. Fine. My thing is I just factor in how much will it take for me to recoup my initial cost. And then in New York, we have a situation where like, what I tend to do is try to find owners at the beginning of the summer. So like March, April, right before summer's springtime, actually.
Right.
I know once I get the property onboarded within 1 month, I can make my money back from the initial investment from a summer month, because the summer months are always, you know, booming.
Popping.
And I already know if anything goes wrong or if the owner decides he no longer wants to do it, I've already made my money back and we're good to go. So if you just tell them, hey, I'll walk away after 2-3 months or 3 months, whatever your threshold, 6 months, you just give me 6 months more, then that's another reason why they would want to work with you as well.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. And I want to underline, because I'm a guy, if you've been around my channel at all, you know that I'm a person that tells you do not invest, especially multifamily buy and hold properties. Don't invest in tenant friendly states because it's really tough. If you do need to get a tenant out or something happens, that could really come back and sting you later in the game. But this is a strategy that's actually a benefit. It's actually a benefit to this model is a benefit to those types of markets. And so that's why I want you all to see the power of this arbitrage strategy. So if you had somebody said to me, Mike, I have you know, an IRA, I've only got $15,000 in it. It was from an old investment. What do I do with this money? This is the best investment for $15,000 in real estate.
Hands down.
Yes, I said it. It is definitely the best. Because Shannon, you just said get your money back. If you're a multifamily investor, you don't get your money back until you sell. And you can actually get your money back. Like
that's
fully
100% return. Yes, 100% return within a month, depending on which month you do it in and what market you're in. So you got to make sure this is all, and I'm giving you numbers that I had to work with, right? We can talk about different markets and stuff, but you know, I was able to get my money back within a month.
Within a month. That's crazy. A month.
$3,000 or $3,000 for a one bedroom. I was able to furnish the entire unit. But again, I've gotten better at furnishing.
So to give you an idea, Shannon and I, she just came out to Indiana to one of my properties and we furnished 6 of the 8 units. The other 2 units are next. What we furnished in those 6 units, the first month of her managing, we made her money back. First month with her managing, we have cash flow coming in to where we made the amount of money we invested into that deal. Now, it's not on top of our expenses yet, but give it a few more months and we'll be fully recoup that transition. And then imagine, just add 2, 3, 4 years of this cash machine. And so that's why this model is so powerful for you. So if you're going to get started, I mean, would you say, Shannon, and that this is one of the best ways to get started if you're just starting off in the Airbnb space? Is this the best way to go?
I mean, you don't really have to have much cash to come in, right? You could even put it on, I mean, I hate to say it, but you can put it on a credit card and then make the money back, because depending on where you are, you can make it back in 2 months, which I just don't know where else you can make 100% return and in that short of time. I tell my friends, I'm like, you know, you could put your money in the stock market and pray for 20%, but I just don't know where you're getting it.
You might swing up with crypto at 20, but it's going to crash. It's going to crash at 15, right? And so it's going to crash 15 over time. So no, you're 100% right. I love it. So now let's switch over. What's that, Shannon?
Reoccurring revenue. So it's just like keeps. So it's not just a one time. Yeah. So
yeah, and that's a good point, because in the fix and flip market, you're going to get your money back every 6 months. You're going to do it every 4 months. Let's say you're doing fast flips. You know, 4 to 6 months, you're going to flip it and you're going to get your cash back, right? But that's all you got, right? It's not a machine. So we want to build cash machines, money printing presses. And this is one of those amazing, amazing opportunities, which is why I wanted Shannon to come on and share a little bit of this strategy. And so now let's talk a little bit about market selection. Because, you know, if somebody might be out in the middle of Iowa, which I love Iowa, I've spoken in Iowa many times. Let's say they're out in the middle of nowhere, you know, and they might think, oh, I'll start Airbnb and some houses around here. And I want to protect them from poor market selection. Because because you live there, by the way, doesn't mean you have to only invest there. I don't own any properties where I live except my house. And all of my properties are across the country. So you don't have to do that. So let's talk a little bit about market selection. What are some of your favorite Airbnb markets right now?
So my favorite right now is the Catskills, because you can come in, you can buy a property. I have examples and owners I'm working with right now, bought a property for $250,000, $300,000 and making $600, $700 a night. Like during our winter night, during the summer months, this owner came in our first month with them. After we got maybe one or two reviews on the account, we cleared $10,000 in the first month. His mortgage is only like $1,500, $1,600. And we're clearing that amount. It's crazy. The Catskills is just, people want to go there to go hiking, to go skiing. And it's just a great market. The other one that I really like is the Hamptons, believe it or not. It's hard to get into. So that's a whole nother thing. And I think that's another group one. But I think there's something about, you know, people can invest, you know, it's harder to get into, but just a lot of the wealthy bankers will want to, you know, pay $60,000, $70,000 for 1 month to just stay in a house in the Hamptons. And again, different markets, it's a little bit, you know, you're going to pay about $1.5 million to get in. But once you're in, the numbers are just crazy.
The numbers are crazy. Exactly. Yeah. So you've got quite a few, and you're from New York. So you got quite a few New York markets that are powerhouses. Buying a house for $300,000 and making $10,000 in a month is nuts.
And then in August we made $17,000. It was just crazy numbers.
That's crazy numbers right there. Crazy. That's crazy numbers. So what are some other markets, maybe nationally, that you like that are great areas to own Airbnb?
I've heard some really good things about South Carolina in the coastal areas there. A lot of people love Colorado. There's some markets there that I've heard really, really well. San Francisco, I mean, they're the headquarters. It's just because it's really expensive to get hotels. Like anywhere where you have dense markets where it's really hard, hotels are really expensive, that's a great place to do it at Airbnb. Because you're always going to win out. You got to think, if you're a family, you're coming from Europe, or you're vacationing for a bachelorette trip or whatever it may be, and hotels are just, you know, it's a group of people. Do you really want to do 3-4 rooms? You can just put everyone in one big house, right?
Yeah,
or
totally.
If you have a family, you want everyone to be together. So think about those when you think about markets. Like, where are places where hotels are really expensive? It's great markets.
Yeah. So you think about places where hotels are really expensive. What about markets where there may not be expensive hotels, but there are hotels? I mean, are hotels always a good indication of where you should park Airbnbs?
No, because I'm from Florida and I would love to do more properties. I'm from right outside of Orlando. I have the whole infrastructure doing Florida, but it just doesn't make sense. One, the market's saturated.
Yep.
Like, for example, you pay $300,000 for a home in Florida, right? And near Orlando, but you're only making like $150, $200 a night because the hotels are so cheap there. It's a race to the bottom. And so I just can't make it work if you're going to spend the time. Not to say that you couldn't make money.
Yep.
It's just that it's just not like, yeah, tons of hotels, tons of, you're like, oh, I'll be right next to Disney World. This should work. But the numbers don't make sense. Yeah.
So this is a good teaching point here, because a lot of times you might think that, and I used to think this, well, if there's hotels there, people must be traveling there. So that means that's a good Airbnb market. But if those hotels are really depressed pricing, you're saying that doesn't necessarily work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's powerful. Or attraction areas like Martha's Vineyard is a very, you know, people go there for the summer, and that's a really good market for us. Like, there's certain areas that are just big attraction areas or big city centers. So Louisville, I heard, does extremely well. And Nashville, oh my goodness, Nashville does really well. New Orleans does really well. There's certain city centers that do really, really well with Airbnb.
That's powerful. That's
you're always going to have people coming in just to visit the city.
Totally. Right? Totally. I was up, I did some work and had some contractors up in Salt Lake City that had some Airbnbs up in Salt Lake City, just because it's a 365 market. People go there year round because in the summer, the hiking and the mountains are gorgeous, but then you've got the ski community. So it's powerful. Tahoe, same thing. Tahoe is a 365 market. And so you've got all these. So if you can find those markets, but it sounds as well like you have some markets that aren't necessarily 365 markets that they are seasonal, but they do really, really well. So it's not always about picking a market you can make money year round, because you might make more money, and you speak to this, might make more money on a market where you have three power months and low months. I mean, is that true? Or?
Yeah, it's true. It's totally risky. And that's how we have a few clients that are in Martha's Vineyard, and all the money is made in 3 months. The money is made in 3 months. We have the shoulder seasons, which we call, so all the money's made during the summer months, because that's where everyone goes. Obama has a house there. Like, it's just, you know, it's the place to be, right? But all the but you make like $2,000 a night during, or $1,500 a night during those summer nights, that it's worth, you know, having the property. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend that maybe for my first property, because it's a little bit more risk, because if something goes wrong in that area where it's a COVID outbreak or just something goes wrong, then you're relying on, you know, no money being made in that 3-month period. So it's a little bit more risky, but the returns could be worth it, because you only have to work for like 3-4 months and then you're off the rest of the time.
Absolutely. That's powerful. That's powerful. So and the thing I like about that too is it opens up a lot of markets, because sometimes you might have a market that's you know, that's a New Orleans or one of these markets that you might think, I don't know, would New Orleans be a good market? Or, and then you go in there and it's booming. Or Nashville, like, what's the draw to Nashville? But Nashville is one of the, so it became the number one multifamily investment city in the country this last year. And you're saying it's booming for Airbnb. And so this is why market selection is so important. Let us know what markets you're in, and we'll give you a little bit of feedback. I'll give you some feedback on that market and connect with our powers that be and say, hey, what's up with this market? So make sure you are letting us know what market you're from, if it would work as an Airbnb, because Airbnb real estate right now, short-term rentals, I don't think it's a fad. I think we're past that. I think they are here to stay. I think the hotel, if I own 35 hotels, Airbnb scares me to death, because I think Airbnb is going to continue to take over. My wife and I, when we travel, heck, we like to stay in Airbnb because I like kitchens and, you know, I like to spread out. And I mean, that's just, it's such more of an amazing opportunity. And so people can capitalize on this for sure. So we talked about markets. What are some tools you use to make sure that you're running your Airbnb effectively? What are some tools people should be looking at?
So one thing to also realize, and this is the non-glamorous part of Airbnbs, is that you're running a mini hotel. Like, don't get it twisted. You're still running a mini hotel. You know, the first maybe 1 to 5 properties you can probably do on your own. It's really hard to do it while you have a full-time job. With a full-time job that's not flexible, we can run over and go handle things. So maybe the first 1 or 2 you can do, but then after that, you need to get like a software that's going to help you. They're called PMS, which is a property management software. It automates guest communications. So they think they're talking to us, but we just automate the communications. So we have a set schedule when things go out. Like once they check in, we say, hey, how's everything going? You know, PMS system's really big. We have one huge thing is pricing tools. So unless you're going to, like, you're running a hotel, you need to price properly. And this is where, I don't know if we're going to get into this a little bit later about maximizing Airbnb, but this is where I see a lot of mistakes are made and you lose a lot of money by not pricing appropriately or putting the proper number of days or pacing. A lot of people don't understand pacing. Like if you book out too soon. So pricing tools, huge. PMS's tool. PMS software is huge. We have electronic guest books, which is a huge tool for us as well, because guests are going to ask you a ton of questions. And if you can go ahead and step in front of that and go ahead and, you know, mitigate all those questions that they're going to ask, it's going to streamline your operations tremendously. So finding an electronic guest book, and then you can put the little QR codes up in the apartment or in the house. And then they know they can always just scan the QR code to see where, you know, or you can send them the link. So those are the tools that I would say are, you know, game changers for me, for the business.
So awesome. Awesome. So, you know, I mean, Airbnb, it's such a vast way to do it, how to do it. But I think the key for people listening today is if you're going to come into this space, you want to do some education, you want to do some learning, get your feet under you to understand what the market looks like, where you should be investing. And I would try, before I bought a property for Airbnb, I would try the arbitrage model. Because you have less cash into the deal and you can give it a little bit of a whirl before you buy a property, and it may not work out and then have to figure out what to do with the property, especially if prices are inflated on properties right now. And so that's one thing. Now, as we go into the maximization question, what you just dropped a hint about. So let's say somebody's listening to this and they've got a couple of Airbnbs, or they've got some properties and they want to turn them into Airbnbs. What are some of the maximizations? And let's go at the angle of the mistakes, because you just mentioned a big mistake people are making. Some mistakes people are making will then lead into that maximization question. So what are some mistakes you see people making, and how could they turn that into a much more profitable biz?
Pricing. People don't know how to account to really plan out. I literally put it in an Excel spreadsheet. I plan out the year. And I will go through and say, I know that there's an event this year, this month. I know I need to increase my price to reflect that, because what some rookies do, they'll come in and they'll set the same price for every single day for the entire year, which we know that's not, you're going to be losing hundreds and thousands of dollars if you do that. We actually hired a revenue manager, and that's her sole job. And I'll tell you right now, it is worth every single penny to pay for someone who's going to look at pricing every single day. I used to do it, but now we've gotten to the scale where we actually hire someone to do it full time. But that's huge. That's a huge way to maximize revenue without even having to do anything. The other thing is really taking a look. A lot of people don't realize that everything is run on algorithms. So if your listing doesn't have enough information on it, Airbnb kind of dings you. They want to see listings that are pretty substantial. So there's different things you can do. Like they want to see that you put comments on your underneath your photos. There's ways to kind of hack the algorithms. And I'm just going to be, there's some statistic that came out that said that if you're not on the first page of the Airbnb listing, like 70% of people book on the first page. So that alone, like we can literally see, we had an owner that gave us an account that had like bad reviews on one, or not bad reviews, but like a listing that wasn't on the first page in the same building in a listing that was on the first page. The one bedroom that's on the first page performs better than the two bedroom in the same building. Because of the algorithm and not on the first page. So it's just those little things can help maximize. And you really need to pay attention to that if you're going to, and it's really, you're not spending any money. You're just actually just taking a moment to kind of tweak some of those things to maximize revenue. And that's every system's going to have that. Whether you list on VRBO, booking.com, Airbnb, there's going to be some algorithm. And you just take a moment, you can Google up top ways to get your listing up, and that will help a lot. Sorry, I don't know if I rambled a little too much.
No. This is good. So if you want to, and I would also add to this in nothing to her content, but also what I've realized is there's so many moving pieces. I believe an Airbnb management company is worth it personally, but I am much more attached to my freedom than some people may be. I am not a doer. I am a creator. And so as I create opportunity and create business, I have to have people that know their niche to be able to make it work. And so Shannon and her team is powerful. Yeah, please.
Can I add to that? So I would recommend if you're first starting off, I would hire a rental manager for the first 6 months, get them to set you up, and then do it yourself. You already have the setup. You can, if you were so set on not having to split the commission with them, because they're going to charge, most rental managers would charge anywhere between 15. It's really rare to get someone to do 15. Typically, it's about 20 to 25% of your revenue or the rents that they collect for you. So, but you can find a few that will do 15. So anywhere between 15 to 25%. I would at least have them set you up with the guest book, have the templates. You can see how they do the wording, and then sign a and then afterwards you can switch over. But at least that, all the pitfalls, them getting you up in the ranking, they could help alleviate all that. And I think that's worth the money. It's a great way to help de-risk getting into the business.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I also, with that being said, when Shannon says rental manager, remember, this is short-term rental manager. This isn't the same thing as a property manager. Very different. Very different. I mean, my property managers for my multifamily, they wouldn't know what to do with this. In fact, I tried to turn one of my property managers into this and it didn't work because it's just a different skill set, whole different skill set. And so I would have a property management company for sure. And so for sure. So let me ask, what are your thoughts on flipping a cheap older house, $35,000, that needs some TLC to make it look nicer with the intentions to make it an Airbnb and potentially getting more money per night after fixing it up? So what do you think about maybe a cheap flip like this, but then turning it into a short-term rental scenario?
I think that's a great idea. The only thing I just want to caution you about, there are certain markets where the Airbnb vacant occupancy rates are so low that even though it's probably better to do a monthly rental. So you just got to make sure you know like how many people are coming into that area. So if you get above 50% occupancy, then you're fine. But if you're below that, then you may have some trouble with being able to do something outside of a traditional monthly rental. And there's cases where I've seen, like, for example, it's interesting in the DC area, right outside of DC in Maryland, there's some markets there. And we've been in DC. Something about Airbnbs are just really cheap in DC. It's weird. It's really weird. Yeah. And where it, for some of the owners, it almost makes sense just to do a standard monthly rental. This is where knowing your market and just doing a little bit of market research will help a lot. But I think it's a great idea if those numbers make sense.
If the numbers make sense. Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you have not, please subscribe to the channel, support us. We're continually pumping content out. nearly every weekday. We're actually getting ready to bring a studio in-house so we can keep putting out more content for you and a live weekly show. Make sure you subscribe to the channel, hang out with our family. We'll be bringing more and more content. And Shannon, how can they, if they do want to, how can they snag your information if they want to work with you and they have a property?
Yeah, you guys can email me directly or give me a ring. Always available via call or and maybe Mike can share my information, but my email is Shannon, S-H-A-N-N-O-N at ep-mg.com. If you shoot me an email, I'll respond to every single person. So just feel free to shoot me an email and I'll be happy to get in contact or at least give you a little bit of advice or point you in the right direction.
All righty. Thank you so much, Shannon, for today. And by the way, always remember, if you're interested in getting in one of my Inner Circle mastermind groups, you'd like to book a strategy session with our team, you're more than welcome to do that. That our mastermind certainly isn't cheap, but it is one of the things that will help you get your real estate done. And so if you're interested in joining one of our mastermind groups, you can book a strategy session with the team. Shannon, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. I truly appreciate your time. And everybody have a fantastic day. We'll see you on our next live show.
Thank you for listening to the Power Up Real Estate Podcast with Mike Fritz. This podcast has been brought to you by Titanium Capital, the home for multifamily real estate investing. You can find them at titaniumcapitalhq.com. That's titaniumcapitalhq.com.